If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
Hey, I'm David Kaplan. Coming up on this edition of the Cubs Talk podcast, Tony Andracki, our Cubs insider at NBC Sports Chicago, and I discuss the effect of the renovation cost on the Cubs' payroll woes. How motivated Theo Epstein might be to move Chris Bryant, or perhaps more than just Chris, some of his biggest names, while he's here at the winter meetings. And our fans' right to be wildly disappointed of where this thing may be headed in 2020.
Let's play two.
And welcome into our Cubs Talk podcast presented by our great corporate partners at Wintrust, home of Cubs checking. He's our Cubs insider, Tony Andracki. I'm David Kaplan. Don't forget, we'll have Sports Talk live and we'll have winter meetings live. We'll be all over everything going on for you, the Cubs fan, here in San Diego. All right, Tony. So last night we had our group dinner. We all went out. We had a nice meal. And we talked a whole lot of sports. And we got into, I remember asking you the question, I said, Tony, the Cubs have gotten over $60 million off the books. How in the hell are they still in cutting payroll mode? Because it doesn't make sense to me. You did some math. Tell me what you came up with.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is a really good question, right? Like, you have Cole Hamels, $20 million coming off the book. You have other guys, Ben Zobrist, Steve Cishek, Brandon Morrow, Brandon Kinster,
Pedro
so many
Strope.
Guys, Pedro Strop. I mean, you do have roughly $65 to $70 million coming off the books. So where did it all go? Well, the Cubs last year were about $240 million in payroll. That's why they owed about $8 million to the luxury tax. So they had to get under the luxury tax this year, they would have to go $32 million below where they were at last year. But they're not quite there. I mean, they're $40 million extra based off of Craig Kimbrell's $16.5 million contract, picking up Rizzo's option that he got a little bit of a raise, and then all the arbitration. You got Chris Bryant, Kyle Schwarber, Javi Baez, Wilson Contreras jumped almost $4 million between, or in terms of what's projected. So you project $40 million for raises and then about $20 million for Rizzo and Craig Kimbrell, their raises that they're getting as well. It adds up to over $40 million just like that. And they had to cut more than $30 million from last year. They're only at about $20 million right now. So it makes sense. They still have $6 million to go if they really want to get under the luxury tax based off of where their projected salary is.
And that is before you improve your team one iota.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and it's just the what they've done so far is adding three pitchers to really just the quality of depth. I mean, you're talking about Jarrell Cotton, Dan Winkler, and then claiming the lefty, the big, tall lefty, Cide Pelham, off of waivers. I mean, yeah, that's it. Those are three guys who all have options who very well may start the year in the minor leagues. We don't know if they're going to be in the bullpen or part of the rotation, but that's all they've done so far.
Okay, so if the Cub fan sits at home and says, hang on a second, I pay the second highest ticket price in the game, and I have these good young players, Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo and Javi Baez and Kyle Schwarber and Wilson Contreras. How did we get here where they're not in the playoffs, they're cutting payroll, and I'm walking through the lobby at 5:15 this morning on my way to go do radio, and I run into one of the bigger name agents in the game. And he says, boy, oh boy, last time I was here for the winter meetings, you guys are getting Chris Bryant. Theo and his team are doing shots in the bar. And 5 years later, the White Sox have the checkbook. Jerry Reinsdorf's in the lobby. and the Cubs are cutting payroll. It's absolutely stunning.
Yeah, that's why nobody's using the word dynasty around the Cubs anymore, because they clearly aren't one and haven't been one. Everybody thought 5 years ago, the last time they were here, when Madden was first coming, John Lester first signed, everybody thought that it was kind of the start of the dynasty, or at least ascending to potentially be that point. But you're right, now they're at the point where we may not see Chris Bryant play another game in a Cubs uniform, or we may not see Wilson Contreras play another game in a Cubs uniform. We just don't know where it's going to go. But yeah, to the point where they have to shed payroll before they're even able to add some littler pieces, like it's scary, I guess, really, based off of where they were 5 years ago.
All right, so let's talk about a comment that Tom Ricketts made a week ago. He did a sit-down with Sports Business Journal, and he talked about the need to be better in player development. Well, that's a no-brainer. They've developed very little in terms of pitching. In fact, basically, if you took a dart and you threw it at a dartboard of players over the last 8 seasons of who was available in the draft as a pitcher, you might have had a better chance of getting a major league arm than they did with the millions they spent. Fair statement?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, some of the guys that Rob Zastrzyzny is one of the guys that that they've drafted and developed and has come through the system that has accounted for the most innings in the big leagues right now. I think he's still number one, or he might be number two, but that is the case. I mean, all these other guys, like, yeah, Kyle Hendricks and C.J. Edwards, they kind of came up through the system, but they weren't drafted and developed. They weren't signed as international minor league
required in trade.
Exactly. So, yeah, it's been the Achilles heel for this front office, but that's also why they're making so many behind-the-scenes changes, because they realized, probably a little too late, that they needed to figure something out, because they have to develop pitching. They have to acquire young pitching a lot better than they had in the past.
Okay, Tom also made a comment on that very interesting interview where the question was, how much did you exceed your budget in renovating Wrigley Field, building Gallagher Way, and you know, this amazing clubhouse and all of it. And as they did that, Tom said, yeah, we went over for 100% over what our budget was. Over 100%. That means the original budget, I went back and did my homework, was $575 million. That means they spent almost $1.2 billion. $1.2 billion. You can't tell me that $1.2 billion isn't affecting what they could spend on player payroll.
Oh, I'm not telling
you that. And they're denying that.
It has to be a factor, right? It has to be. And then they're getting the new TV deal, and Theo has said, too, that, like, there's a factor here, that the TV deal, it's not changing anything. It's not this big windfall of cash that a lot of people thought it would be or speculated it might be. So between those two things added up, and then the fact that, yeah, they did pay the luxury tax last year, the penalties would be more this year and start getting into the draft compensation issue as well if they go over the luxury tax threshold again this year. So everything's a factor. Everything that has added into this has a factor for their baseball operations payroll right now.
Yeah, and I understand from talking with one of these agents that you have to at some point reset under the luxury tax, because it becomes more and more punitive the longer that you exceed it. And if you continue to exceed it or exceed it dramatically, you're talking about losing draft picks.
Yeah.
And that has to be the lifeblood of any organization. So, again, I understand some of the fiscal restraint that has to be out there. But when you've got, as I mentioned, all those good young players, Tony, the average fan goes, hold on, you want me to pay how much for a ticket? How much you want me to pay for a beer? How much you want me to pay for all these different things around the ballpark, stay at your hotel, watch your new channel, all of it, and you're moving backwards? It's pretty hard to fathom.
Yeah, it is, but on the other end, the devil's advocate part here is they had $240 million payroll last year and they won 84 games. Like, that's really the major issue here, is that they're taking a step back from an 84-win season. They're not taking a step back from a 97-win season where they made it to the NLCS. So, yeah, that's why it looks so much worse, too, I think, because you can't dress this up in any way that they could even dress up after the 18 season. Like, yeah, we won 95 games. We're the top seed in the NL until the final, you know, game 163 of the season. You can do that and you can rationalize it. You can't do that here. They didn't make the playoffs. They were obviously out of it almost a full week left in the season. And now they have to cut payroll and they have to potentially take a step back in terms of talent. So it's just not a good place to be. There's a lot of work for Theo and Jed that they have to do this winter.
Okay, we're going to be doing this each and every day, and things will develop and we'll update stories. But do you, Tony Andracki, because I think we're in a different place, believe when you get on that plane Thursday to fly back to Chicago that the Cubs will have traded one of Baez, Contreras, Bryant, Rizzo?
I do not, no. I really don't think Baez or Rizzo are going to be traded anywhere anyways. But, yeah, I mean, Bryant or Contreras are two guys that are definitely out there. I just don't think that anything's going to happen. So for Bryant, breaking him down specifically, I don't think the Cubs are going to get what they're asking for him. There's no reason that they're not going to trade him just to trade him. And assuming that his grievance doesn't go through, he still has 2 years left of service time. So I just, for another team, honestly, really outside the Dodgers, I don't know another team that thinks that Bryant would put them over the top.
The Braves?
They'd be willing to pay
if they
the
lose Josh Donaldson, they're all in to win.
All right, the Braves are another one as well, yeah, but there are options. I mean, they got Donaldson last year that nobody thought he would take, you know, a one-year deal, and they got him for 1 year, $23 million. So right now, with Donaldson still out there, with Anthony Rendon still out there, Moustakas is off the board, but there are still third base options for teams that really need it. So both the Dodgers and Braves, they can fill their need without giving up their prospect capital.
But let's assume, as has been speculated today, the Phillies get Josh Donaldson.
Okay.
And he is locked up there. And let's assume that Anthony Rendon, pick one, goes to the Texas Rangers, which everyone seems to believe they're the front runner to get him.
Yeah.
Okay, that third base market is then really dry.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's the Braves, Dodgers, Nationals, all would need a third baseman, of course. So it makes a lot of sense. But that's also why, is that all going to happen this week? So by the time we get home, even if Bryant is traded, is that going to happen this week? Are all these dominoes going to fall to where the Cubs are in a position where they get what they want, where they get the offer that they want, where they'd pull the trigger on that? I don't think that's going to happen. I think there's still too many things that have to play out. Now, we've seen craziness at these winter meetings before, so it could happen all in one afternoon. I don't know, but I'm betting that it's not going to happen, and I'm also just betting in general that no team is going to meet the Cubs' asking price for Chris Bryant this winter.
So do you think they do anything here this week?
That's a great question. I mean, you know, we talked about they need to shed a projected $6 to $7 million in payroll. So before
that's
they can even
start just to get under the luxury tax.
Right. So
even that doesn't improve your team.
Exactly. And trading away Wilson Contreras, who's projected to make $4.5 million in his first year of arbitration, that still doesn't even get you under the luxury tax. So even doing that is not shedding the type of payroll that would allow them to go out and make a signing for a left-handed reliever or anything else that they may need. So I don't know. I think that it's setting up to potentially be another bust for Cubs fans for this week here. Now, obviously, I could be wrong, but I don't know if things are really going to play out where Cubs fans are going to be happy or satisfied with the moves from this week. And I still don't even know if Wilson Contreras would even be traded this week if he's traded at all.
Yeah, I am more optimistic that something of substance will happen for the Chicago Cubs this week, because the longer you wait, teams spend their money. And all of a sudden you look up and go, we should have made that deal for Chris Bryant when we got that offer. It may not have been the perfect offer, but we were moving $18 million in payroll. We're not going to be able to re-sign him, so we should make that deal now rather than waiting until the holidays are right around the corner. Teams are saying, oh, let's wait till after the first of the year, and all of a sudden you wake up and you're stuck.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, there's a good case to be made that the Cubs should have signed Craig Kimbrell at this time last year, you know, or any team, really, but how many of the injury issues that he had were related to the fact that he didn't have a normal spring training? He didn't have a normal 3 months of the season, first half, to ramp things up. And then they obviously had bullpen issues from the start. That season opening road trip, the bullpen and the closer spot were a major issue for the team. Brandon Morrow never threw a pitch. So, yeah, they ended up spending the money. They had the Ben Zobrist money coming off the books, but they spent it. So, in hindsight, and it's always 2020, but you look at it and the Cubs should have signed Craig Kimbrell at this time last year, and maybe things would have been a lot different for him and for them throughout the year.
Correct, but the other teams in baseball also didn't sign Craig Kimbrell, and they'll say to you, I'm not giving up my draft pick
exactly.
to sign a guy, but he was a compensation player. If you waited till June 1, no compensation. That's why he sat out there. So how much does that draft pick mean to you versus you signed a guy who was never right all year long?
Yeah, I mean, and it shows because all 30 teams in baseball did the exact same thing. So the draft pick compensation is huge, and we've seen that a lot from a lot of different players throughout free agency. But also for, like you talked about, with the luxury tax threshold and the penalties, money is one thing, but when you start messing with people's draft capital, when they have to move down 10 spots or lose a pick altogether, that's a huge deal. And teams' front offices do not want to get rid of their first pick, their second pick, whatever it is, for things like this.
Well, again, the Cubs have put themselves in a trick box. They've signed bad contracts. They have made some trades that were bad trades. Jose Quintana, most notably, and you and I agree on a part of it. A little bit, you understand more of their side. I don't.
Yeah.
And then they decided not to make a trade for a guy who begged to come to the Cubs in Justin Verlander. That's all played a role in all of this.
Yeah, I mean, Verlander, obviously, that would have helped them in terms of on-field performance, but it would have also hurt them so much in terms of financial capability. They get Verlander in that deal. It was the same time, right, 2017. I don't think they have the funds or the financial flexibility to sign Yu Darvish. So you're talking about having potentially Verlander, and then they would have had to fill something somewhere else. Obviously, the Tyler Chatwood signing to date hasn't worked out the way anybody envisioned that it would. And that hurts, too, because that's $13 million against the salary cap on the books for each year, and last year was a guy that accounted for, you know, 60 innings or so. So all of these things, I mean, it does play a factor. And the financial flexibility they acquired in that Jose Quintana deal, it never really came to fruition the way that they wanted it to, just because, like you said, some bad contracts and things didn't work out. Injuries. I mean, you pay Brandon Morrow almost $10 million last year, and he doesn't throw a pitch for you.
Right, but that was an ill-conceived signing from the moment that they made it. The Morrow one. He went to camp with the Dodgers on a minor league deal and didn't even make their team out of spring training because of health concerns. He pitches really well for the Dodgers, again, albeit on a minor league deal, and then they use him and ride him like a horse every single game, all seven of them in the World Series, and then the Cubs ride in with $22 million, and lo and behold, he's not healthy again.
Yeah, it was. And, I mean, you know, Theo has admitted that, you know, like, again, in hindsight, maybe it wasn't the best, but their heart was in the right place. Their head was, too. They took a gamble. You can't predict injuries. But with a guy like Brandon Morrow, in a way, if you could predict an injury for anybody, it's a guy like that.
Yeah,
it's,
you actually could predict injury because his whole career has been an injury.
Yeah, it has. And then, like you said, I mean, he was used so – they used him all the time down the stretch
in
the World Series. So it's difficult. And looking back, I mean, that really set the team back the last couple years because they didn't really have a good plan B, because even when Pedro Strop was closing and was doing well, it still opened up a hole in terms of setup. Then, you know, in the end of 2018, Strop obviously hurt his hamstring, but they didn't have a great setup bridge to get to Strop. Then last year, Morrow doesn't pitch at all. They didn't really have the closer spot locked down all year, even when Kimbrel was there. Between injury and ineffectiveness, it wasn't a lockdown closer. So really, yeah, the Morrow signing is another one you can look back to, in $20-something million dollars for a guy who pitched a half a season.
All right, let me tell you another thing. They cannot go into next season with Jose Quintana, a member of the team, or sign up to an extension. I wouldn't do that. They might. But you cannot allow him to go into his walk year knowing I'm not giving him a qualifying offer because he might take it, heaven forbid. And you're not signing that guy to an extension unless he's willing to take a really inexpensive deal. And why would he do that? He's already done it once.
Right.
So with 1 year of control left, it's almost essential that you trade him.
Yeah, it's a good point, because with 1 year of control, you're basically saying that you're going all in for 2020 in a way. But we already know they're not. They've already said that in some ways they hope to be a better product and have more wins on the field, even if they have a little bit less talent. But that's part of the avenue where they could go. They could clear up $10.5 million of salary and financial flexibility by dealing him. I don't know what they could get for him. That's really the biggest thing. It doesn't make sense to sell him for pennies on the dollar, but what is it that they're going to get in return? No team is going to part with a top prospect or their number one prospect for it. But are they going to get, could they get a useful reliever for him and then get the salary relief? And then they have, you know, guys like Alec Mills or Edward Elzele to potentially plug into the rotation in Quintana's spot. That's an option. And it's one that the Cubs definitely would explore if it's out there.
Well, there's a lot to digest this week, but I will be stunned, and I think fans will be wildly disappointed if the Cubs get on the plane to go home on Thursday and they've done absolutely nothing except sign Daniel Winkler, whoever that guy is, Henry's brother. I don't have any idea.
The Fonz's son, yeah.
Don't you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree. It would be a disappointment for sure. The one thing that's working in the Cubs' favor and the favor of the fans is this offseason has been a lot quicker than it has been in the last couple of years, where the last two winter meetings were almost nothing. I mean, last year the Cubs did essentially nothing, and 2 years ago they signed Morrow. The rumor came out Sunday night. They made it official with Drew Smyly on Monday, and that was pretty much it. So for 2 years of winter meetings, they have Morrow and Drew Smyly to show for it, and Smyly never threw a pitch for the Cubs. So I agree 100%. I do think that would obviously be a disappointment. I just don't think it's realistic. I think I'd put more money on the Cubs going home, not really doing anything or doing anything that would make fans anything but disappointed, rather than a big move that would make Cubs fans satisfied.
Who is the most stunning name that if they were moved, you would be shocked? Is it Javi? Is it Contreras? Is it, heaven forbid I say this, Anthony Rizzo?
I just don't think Rizzo would be moved because he is the face of the franchise and he doesn't cost much. He's about $16 million this year too. So I just don't really see the reasoning behind that. Same with Javi. And that's another thing. You know what? Like, maybe it's possible that the Cubs, their big move, their satisfying move for fans, is inking Javi to an extension while we're here. That's totally possible. So I think that's much more likely than them trading him. So, yeah, I would be totally blown away, shocked, if the Cubs traded Javi Baez. I'm not quite sure why they would do that. It'd be really curious to see if something like that came out, what the return would be. But that would be the one that would blow me away more than anything, is Javi being traded.
All right, one other thing. The farm system is not getting rave reviews from the people I talk to. Jim Callis is going to be on this podcast later in the week from MLB Pipeline. But they said that there are, you know, a handful of guys at the top of the system that are pretty good, but that the system as a whole is really, really down. So who is in that system? Braylon Marquez, Nico Hoerner, who else? Brennan Davis? I mean, what are we talking about here?
Yeah, I mean, Brennan Davis and Cole Roeder are two outfield prospects who people like a lot, and they're two guys who, I mean, Davis has a very high ceiling. I think his floor is pretty low. There's a possibility that he doesn't really do anything, but there's a lot of natural raw talent there that could potentially be harnessed. And Roeder is a guy too. He was the guy that a lot of Cubs fans might remember didn't recognize Ben Zobrist in the hot tub down in Arizona in the Cubs
pretty
complex
funny.
A couple years ago. So those are two guys I think to keep an eye on as well. But in terms of pitching, that's really the big question mark. These other guys beyond Braylon Marquez need to come up. And apart from Nico Hoerner, really what other guys are close? I mean, Miguel Amaya, their catcher, is still probably a year or so off as well. So there's nothing imminent in terms of the prospect pipeline.
Right, so the pipeline can't step in and help. There has been a lot of talk about Nicholas Castellanos. Is he in play? Ken Rosenthal said there's no chance. Nick Castellanos is not. Then John Heyman said today, well, slow down a second. They actually are still trying to keep engaged with Castellanos, but they've got to move a bunch of money before they could go engage. Is there a chance that he is back in a Cubs uniform?
I think there is a chance because they really like him. They like so much about what he brought to the table, not just as a hitter, but his energy, his passion. He was becoming a leader in under 2 months in that clubhouse, which is a really, really difficult thing to do, given the difficult spot they were at as well. So the front office likes him, the coaching staff likes him, the players like him a lot. There is a lot to like about Nicholas Castellanos. The fit, they could figure it out. You know, they could move Hayward to center. In 2 years, Schwarber's a free agent. 2 years, maybe the DH is coming to the National League. So there are ways to work around that. But the biggest thing would be the money. I mean, if they pay him, say, $20 million a year, and we're already saying they're $6 to $8 million over, you're talking about moving almost $30 million just to be able to afford him, and then you'd have other holes that you'd need to fill as well. It's a tough ask.
Yeah, and I just personally don't believe, having watched as much baseball as I have, and many of our viewers and listeners out there have watched more than we have, you're going to start a season that you think you're going to have a chance to contend in the Central Division, and your outfield defense is Castellanos, Hayward out of position, and Kyle Schwarber? No shot.
Yeah, that would be tough. Even with wind blowing in or anything at Wrigley, it would be a very tough thing to do. They did it down the stretch last year, and it's not like the defense is what cost them games. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, over 162-game sample, that would expose itself quite a bit more than just a couple months at the end of the year.
The other interesting thing is, if you read some of the metrics reports that are out there and you talk to some of the scouts around the game, some I saw today, they're not all in that Chris Bryant even stays at third base. They said that might hurt your market as much as not knowing if he's got 1 year or two. This one scout said to me, kid, for me, he's an outfielder. I don't think he's good enough to be an everyday third baseman. So interesting to see how the different perspective is in different markets.
Yeah, it is. I mean, Bryant has been good enough to be an everyday third baseman in his career to this point. I mean, they won a World Series with him. They've won a lot of games with him there. But his positional versatility, I think, is one of the knocks or one of the best assets that the Cubs have to dangle him, because we talk about the third base market, but really that was, you know, a little bit of a mistake. We should have said, like, okay, you know, there's a team that, like the Reds, for example, not that the Cubs would necessarily make the move, but they have Eugenio Suarez at third. They just signed Mike Moustakas, but they could potentially use an outfielder, so Chris Bryant could be that guy. Like, teams that want either a third baseman or an outfielder, and that versatility really could help too. If they're giving up prospect capital, if they're willing to take on that salary for 2 years, then yeah, I mean, getting a guy that doesn't just have to play one position, that's a huge boost.
Well, you are talking about people at home watching this going, hang on a second. I've been rooting for that team, and I might not see Chris Bryant. I might not see Wilson Contreras. Javi might not sign an extension for financial reasons, but he might be there for two more years. What are we going to become, the Tigers?
The 2014 Tigers?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the worst-case scenario, right? That's what they don't want to have happen. So I don't know. I mean, I think a lot will depend on those guys being traded, what they get back in return. Are they getting back top prospects that are a couple years away? Are they getting back guys that can help the big league pitching staff in 2020? Or are they just getting like a bunch of role players? You know, I mean, remember what the Astros gave up for Gerrit Cole was hardly anything when you look back. They're a bunch of role players and kind of depth fillers in terms of the big league rotation and bullpen. So, yeah, if you want to make the move and that's all you're getting in return, then I understand why fans wouldn't be wowed, but I don't think that's what the Cubs are getting in return. I don't think that's what they want.
Yeah, I will be stunned if a brilliant guy like Theo and an equally brilliant guy like Jed decide, well, we just got to move the money, so just give us whatever.
Right.
Just take the money. You cannot possibly tell me that's something they're considering.
No, I mean, they're not going to make a move just to make a move. They could make a move just to shed some salary, but they're not going to do it with those guys, right? They're not going to do it with the Bryants and the Contreras. If you make a move to shed salary, it'd be with the Tyler Chatwood type of guys, or even Jason Hayward, though I have no idea how you would even move that contract at
all. Well, what if I said to you, hold on a second, you want Chris Bryant? Okay. You can have Chris Bryant. You're taking Hayward and X number of the money. I'll eat some of it. You're taking the rest. That now opens up a whole world of interesting possibilities for me.
It does, but it also means they get hardly anything in return in terms of that prospect capital or other guys on the 2020 that can immediately help in 2020. And then you're also creating another hole. I mean, Jason Hayward at $20 to $23 million a year, sure, that's a lot of money, but he's still a very, very valuable player, a valued presence and voice in that clubhouse. So you'd be losing a ton and not really getting much in return but salary relief. So I don't think they're going to go that route.
Well, I'm excited to see how this week shakes out. I think, like most Cubs fans, there's a little bit of trepidation that
absolutely.
Wow, what am I going to be watching next year? As we sit here today, I have them as a 79-win team. And people at home just threw up their lunch.
Well, Pecota had them as a 79-win team last year, and everybody freaked the hell out. And then they won 84 games and barely got above 79 wins. So I don't know. I mean, right now 79 wins seems pretty accurate. I think probably a little over that. But if they start subtracting talent from the roster, I don't know. I mean, you're talking about a first-year manager, a lot of first-year coaches on that staff, and a lot of changes that need to take place that wouldn't necessarily manifest themselves in 2020.
Yeah, I know that a lot of people feel Joe Maddon should still be the manager, and I'm sure at some point Joe was thinking, I won a World Series. I went to three NLCSs. I won more games than basically anyone in the sport over a five-year span. And you're telling me I can't manage your team? All right, good luck to you. Well, I think now that he's gone back to his own old organization, that he's got a brand-new three-year, $10 million deal, there's got to be a part of him walking around here going, I'm good. Thanks for all the money you paid me. We won the World Series. They'll never take that away from us, but I'm probably in a better place.
Yeah, he insisted on the final day of the season when it was officially announced that he'd be leaving. He insisted that this was a move that he wanted to, that was good for him. And maybe you can look at that as a skeptic and say, like, oh, that's just saving face. That's just the PR spin. But I do think that there's a little bit of the truth to that. And he talked about, I mean, he joked that in Chicago, the market in terms of the media and the fan base and you know, talk about Theo says, do something for 10 years, then do something else. Give yourself a new challenge. He joked that for managers in Chicago, it's probably five. And he had 5 years here. So, I mean, to be honest, I don't blame him. He's going to a new place where they're excited for him, where 5 years ago the Cubs felt the same way. Now the Angels are in that same boat. So it's a good spot for him to be in, absolutely, for the last few years or however many of his career.
All right, we'll be both at the Theo media session. I'm also going to go see the Rick Hahn session. And we'll have a whole bunch of people we're bringing through on Sports Talk Live and Winter Meetings Live. So we'll see how this all shakes out.
We'll see.
All right, he's Tony Andracki. I'm David Kaplan. Our Cubs Talk podcast every day from right here in San Diego, brought to you by our great partners at Wintrust, home of Cubs checking. Have a great rest of your day. It's just day one, folks. A lot to get to here at the Winter Meetings 2019 in San Diego. For Tony, I'm Cap. We'll see you.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know business.